Welcome to this episode of the Comedy Defect Podcast. My name is Winter, I'm a comedian, and this is my show. Those that are new to the show, welcome. Those that are old to the show, thanks for coming back, guys. This is episode 108 with a comedian that's bulletproof. He's so bookable. He has closed my gigs in Hertfordshire many times, and he always goes down a treat. He received a Lifetime Achievement Award for his comedy. He's a magician. It is, of course, Otis Canlone. And he's online. You can find him online at otiscanlone.com. That's OTISCANNELLONI.com. And he's got a Facebook page. You can find him there as well. Go like it. He's excellent. And if you want to find us, we're online. You can find me on Instagram at Winter Dominus. You can also find our Facebook page. Go like it. And our Facebook group. You can go and join that as well. And look, if you like this podcast enough and you want to donate, you can. Go to Patreon, type in The Comedy Defect Podcast, or donate as little or as much as you feel this podcast is worth. But if you can't donate, that's okay. Just tell your friends about your favourite episode, because it tells people where we are and what we're up to. I talked to Otis for over an hour, and it was just a pleasure to speak to him. And so, look, go and find him online. Go and research him. Go and check him out. If you're a promoter, go and book him. He's brilliant. Otis Canlone. For episode 108 of the Comedy Defect Podcast. So grab a cup of tea, put your headphones on, sit down and listen to this master talk about his history in comedy. Enjoy. Otis Canlone, how are you?
I'm good. Surviving the onslaught, but I'm here and I'm ready.
Well, how have you managed to cope in the last year or so?
Yeah, I mean, there's been very little work. There was the occasional live work between the shutdowns and a little bit of online stuff, which were not particularly enjoyable when you're speaking to somebody who's not there and you can't see any reaction. The early times, I know they've improved, but I haven't done any since then. That's been a pain. Otherwise, I've been painting, actually. One of my hobbies was is oil painting. So I've been banging those out for the last few months.
Any particular style? Like, are you doing landscapes? Are you doing portraits of people, or what are you doing?
Well, I've always done, I mean, it's only a hobby. I'm not trained in any way, so it's all barely professional. But lots of bright colours. You know, I've done various different things. And during the lockdown, I've done about 25. So last year and the beginning of this year, in the last month or so, I've been doing portraits of comic actors.
Great.
I started with Tommy Cooper. I've done Sykes, Harpo Marx, that sort of thing. So, that's been keeping me more or less sane.
All the ones that are dead, is it? All the dead comics, is it?
Yeah, well, they sit still for longer.
It's very true, very true.
Yeah, I mean, they're ones from my childhood and past, really. So, I mean, I might make my way forward and do some that are alive. You never know.
Yeah.
I've had a few suggestions, but we'll see. We'll see what occurs.
Are those people who you were looked up to when you first got into comedy?
Before that, really. You know, with Harpo Marx, Tommy Cooper and Eric Sykes. I used to watch all their programs when I was young. I used to love the comedy programs then. I like to choose ones that have got interesting faces. I've done Victoria Wood as well, somebody a little bit later, and sadly not still alive. Ones that have meant something to me, and I think they've got an interesting face that hopefully I can capture.
That's it. You don't want a completely angular one, which is just not interesting to look at. You want kind of cartoonish caricature like Tommy Cooper and those kind of those ilk.
Yeah, that's right. I've done a couple of women, but because they tend to be more, you know, beautiful and stuff, but the blokes are rugged and lined, and they're not easy to get the characters with.
A couple of years ago, I did a clown course just to see if I was any good at being a clown. And, you know, when the people walked into the course, I mean, I looked at them and I was like, oh my God, they don't have any makeup on and they actually look like clowns. And I was like, oh, like, I said, these guys, I would definitely, I'd give them a job. They definitely have their whole thing sorted out, even before any, you know, clothes or anything. It was so hard. And I felt really like the odd one out. I was like the outsider in the outsiders, you know, I was like, oh no. And then to try and make a jumper into a dog and make it do tricks. And I was like, for me, it was like, it's still a jumper. It was so hard. Your style, it's like when I saw you, it's like you're very much like Frankie Howard. that sort of style.
Really?
Kind of like that. Like the
I
kind of like
that one before.
This the mistakes are all it's all planned, and you know it looks like you're about to go, but go haywire. But it's all completely planned.
Well, one of the best pieces of advice I ever heard was it's always best to make a fool of yourself before somebody makes a fool of you. And I think I've taken that onto the stage. And yeah, it's a rather bumbling persona, really. And it's people say it's Tommy Cooperish, in as much as I sort of tend to do a little bit of magic as well. Although there's a lot of stand up there. A lot of one-liners. Yeah, it's a rambling sort of thing that often you think is leading nowhere and then hopefully finds its place.
It's great.
Where did you witness Mr. Cannelloni on stage?
I witnessed you at the Grey Horse in Kingston, and I also witnessed you at the Cricketers in the one. I don't think they do that gig anymore. It's the one with a very high ceiling, which has some sort of celebratory accoutrements, if you like. I don't know why that French word came out of my head there. And, you know, just like you just try to find a different word, and French pops in. How did that happen? I don't even didn't do French at school. Wow. But so
the Grey Horse was a great little gig.
Absolutely, it's lovely. And like you were like, just it was just lovely to watch. You know, you have a lovely sort of bumbling momentum to your stuff, and you got Master of Mirth from Time Out for one of your quotes. A magical wag, bewitching, the Guardian. Fair play, man. That's brilliant.
Guardian, yeah.
Oh, very nice. And like, it was wonderful to watch, as I say. And like that gig that we did, the Cricketers, you did, I mean, it was a hard gig. It was a hard gig, but you did absolutely brilliantly.
That long room.
That's the really long one, which it looks like you're going to get stabbed downstairs. And then you go upstairs and you're like, okay, this feels like a nativity play that has about to take place.
I'll remember it now.
Otis, how long have you been going?
Well, I did my first proper sort of alternative comedy performances, because I've always performed, but on the comedy scene, as it was, probably in 1981. Wow. I know, I'm usually on the bill with people that weren't even born then, nowadays. But back in the early days, it was a lot different from what it is now.
And what was your performance that you did before the comedy then?
I was always into perform. I mean, I was born in a theatre.
Oh, yeah?
You got to start there, isn't it?
Wow.
It was in Guy's Hospital.
Right.
It was an operating theatre. But, I put on a bit of performance when I first came into the world, apparently. And the hospital theatre was required. But, you know, it's a great thing to be able to say, isn't it? Born in a theatre. Blood everywhere. Yeah. Should have been there, yeah. So that was, Guy's Hospital. Just in the sound of Bow Bells, of course. So, so that was the start of it. Mm. And also, I'm an identical twin.
Oh, right.
So obviously, identical twins draw a lot of attention. You know, I mean, babies do anyway, and children do. But when you're identical and there's a lot of looking and questions, and we were obviously very, very close and had a good relationship, and we were always getting into trouble and doing turns and stuff. We always used to put on shows for our aunts and uncles and mum and dad and elder siblings.
Wow.
Yeah, doing just stupid stuff. It was an early double act.
Yeah.
I think you could say.
Great.
Just stupid stuff.
Like what did you write it, or did you just like improv it and mess about and you just like going off together like on a whimsy?
I don't think we planned much at all, really. You know, we used to watch, you know, Chaplin, Lauren Hardy, Keaton, all the Max Sennett stuff, you know, the Keystone Cops, stuff like that, all in black and white. We just sort of did that. You know, I think we used to do a little thing with two fat policemen,
right?
And we just stick our stomachs out and just kept walking into each other, and all the relatives would just fall about laughing. So we loved that. That was really good. I can remember, I like telling jokes, so I can remember quite early on compiling a list of sort of jokes that you find and hear and stuff as a child, and write them down, and then reading them out to the class for sort of like show and tell type things, you know.
Yeah.
And that was an early buzz.
Wow, I bet.
Yeah. So a bit ridiculous.
And like, is your twin brother still around?
Yeah, he's still around. He's done various jobs. He's a plumber now, and living in Wales. He has performed with me a couple of occasions. We did Hackney Empire one night.
Oh yeah,
big night at Hackney Empire. I was compere for a variety show. I got pyrotechnics as well. So I did a disappearance on one side of the stage in a great big puff of smoke, and a split second later on the other side of the stage, which is quite vast, as you know.
Brilliant.
Another big puff of smoke, and he just stepped on.
Oh, that's great.
That got a good round of applause.
I'll bet. What year was that?
It would have been during the 80s.
Wow.
Middle 80s. Brilliant. Perhaps, you know, 86, something like that.
So this is way before the... before the Hackney?
Go on, you've got a date
I think that, like, there's a... this is predates the film Prestige, isn't it? You know, the one when he... brilliant,
yeah,
that's great.
That.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, but it was that trick.
Yeah.
At the end of the show, I remember, as the compere, I was bringing people back on, and the last person I brought on was Otis Cannelloni. So I was at one end of the stage, and my brother was at the other. I was speaking to somebody in the audience who knew me, didn't know I had a twin brother.
Oh, yeah.
And she said, when he came back on, I just felt physically sick.
What?
She couldn't comprehend in her mind.
Yeah.
Because she didn't know I had a twin.
Yeah, brilliant. Just like, just overwhelmed with the magic of the moment. It's like, how is this? This is supernatural. This is witchcraft. Yeah. How is he doing this? Wow.
The first trick was mad enough. How does he do this? Is it a hologram?
Amazing. That's amazing. Just turning people's heads. Like, what? So you brought yourself back on at the end, right? And did you have to do a set as well?
No, that was just the final closing of the show.
Got you. I
was just bringing all the other acts on, and then the final act I brought on.
Amazing.
I'm not quite sure.
You literally couldn't top that, could you? Like, you know, like, well, now I'll start telling jokes.
That is the end of the show.
Totally. Yeah, that's it. I mean, if you want to be really horrible, you could have done that at the beginning of the show and gone, okay, guys, and now for your next act.
that would have been handy.
That would have been tough. That's amazing, though. What a brilliant gift, huh?
Yeah.
You have a twin brother
sure
like that.
YouTube somewhere.
Gotta check it out.
I really look for it, but I think it was for the BBC Open Door. They were doing a thing about the Hackney Empire. A fantastic space.
A couple of friends have said they did the Hackney Empire competition, the new act of the year thing, a couple of times. Said, it's an amazing room. I must enter that.
One of those. Yeah, no, it's a fantastic space.
Yeah.
Marvellous theatre. I had a long history with that as well.
Oh, your long history with the Hackney Empire?
Yeah, I was one of the helpers at the beginning, setting it up.
So how did that transpire?
Well, because Roland and Claire Muldoon opened up the Hackney Empire, brought it back to life, didn't they? They were really, really important in the early stages of alternative comedy, alternative cabaret in the early days, the early 80s going on. They opened a number of venues all over London, and they put on a variety night. And they were fantastic shows. They were really great to be involved with, because it was not like nowadays, it's basically all stand-up, isn't it? In those days, on that circuit, you'd have poetry, you'd end the night with music, you'd have a comedian, a juggler, dancers. You know, it was really the essence of variety, I think. They were fantastic nights, and the audiences loved them. And I mean, it was only we're going back now, about £2.50 to get in, that sort of money. But they worked up a really, really brilliant circuit.
Mm.
And there, you know, lots of acts started on there. I mean, Benjamin Zephaniah was one of the poets. He's gone on to quite an acclaim, and he marked my words. Phil Jupiter was there, was Porky the Poet. and great music. I remember they used to have a band, often they book them to play at the end, and everybody would be up dancing, you know.
Yeah.
It was great. They're called The Happy End. And they were a huge orchestra. There was about 20 of them, you know. And it wasn't worth, financially, it wasn't worth them playing. They wouldn't have been paid that much. Well, none of us were, really. But it was such a fantastic experience. They were really great nights. And, you know, I met some great acts there. Lots of them were street acts, jugglers and stuff. You know, J.J. Waller would come in. And there was a brilliant, true variety.
Yeah. You know,
much more interesting, I think, what we've got now. Roland and Claire then went on and opened up revitalised the Hackney Empire. You know, got grants and stuff. I mean, it was really run down. Mm. It was a bingo hall, basically. They had bingo seats nailed, screwed to the stage. It was awful. And we went in there, and there's quite a few of us, you know, took everything apart and put it up as well as we could. Opened up the auditorium, the bar, of course. It was all a bit dilapidated. I mean, since then, it's been done up to a really, really high standard with lots more grants and stuff. Mm. But back then, it was still run down, but it was open. Mm. And it was fantastic. I remember the opening night, I compared the second half, and John Hegley compared the first half.
Wow.
When that curtain opened, and, you know, there was like 2,000 people.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah.
And it was amazing, you know. They got the dance, the stalls were full, and the first circle were full. You couldn't go any higher up yet because it hadn't been cleaned out properly. And, you know, it's a Frank Matcham building, which has got a typical horseshoe shape. The acoustics are brilliant. You don't really need a microphone for a lot of it.
Amazing.
But, and the lights and stuff. Yeah, it was absolutely brilliant. But they did, Roland and Claire Muldoon, that were instrumental in that. And they've continued booking me from the early start of my career up until, well, say the present time, not for a year or so. But up until then, you know, they belong to Cast Theatre.
Right.
It was a very left-wing alternative, the cartoon archetypical slogan theatre. Or the campaign against Shakespearean theatre, whichever one you like. I did a pantomime with them. I co-wrote that with Roland, a left-wing pantomime, Reds Under the Bed, which we toured all over the country, which was fantastic.
Do you write for, like, the News Review or anything like that as well?
No. Simple answer to that one.
That's fine, mate.
No.
That's absolutely fine.
Originally, when I was at, I went to drama college.
Whereabouts?
Did a lot of him. Went to Breton Hall in Yorkshire, which is a beautiful place, lovely grounds and stuff. It was a teacher's training centre there, and a lot of it was to do with drama. The head of drama there was a big improviser, a chap called John Hodgson. Mm. Lots of books he's written, if you care to look at
John Hodgson,
nowadays. John Hodgson, yeah. So we did a lot of improvising, we did a lot of theatre there, and I went on to become a drama teacher in secondary school. Oh. Then, at that time, I hadn't... At the very beginning then, I hadn't started doing the performing. I did towards the end, and that's what stopped me carrying on teaching. But at the early stage, I used to write sketches. Two Ronnies, not the 9 o'clock news. I've got a few on those.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that was... and then brilliant. I stopped. And then I started taking up a little bit of the stand-up.
Do you remember the first joke you wrote to just do on stage?
Well, I can remember one when I was a kid... Mm. And I don't know whether this spurred me on to become a comedian because they say you can hide behind humour. We used to have slides of, you know, family slides. We'd show after holidays, take a load of pictures, and then my dad would get made into slides, and that would come to projector, and the family would sit around and he'd project all the slides from the holiday. And there was one slide of my aunt who was on the large side, standing next to a 5-bar gate. And I didn't even think about it. I just said, cow and gate. and for a second or two, I thought, I'm going to get walloped here.
Yeah.
But they just all laughed.
Great.
And that was a huge relief.
Yeah. Nice.
Even
nice.
My aunt laughed, you know. She had a good sense of humour.
That's good.
So I think that was something that stuck to my mind then. I can remember that probably better than the early lines I used to use when I first started doing the comedy properly, really.
Did you go through the same sort of school of hard knocks as the Tunnel Club as well back in the day, I guess?
I did play the Tunnel Club, yeah, on a few occasions.
Yeah.
And ducked glasses and bottles and stuff like that. Yeah, I mean, that was just... bear pit. That was just mad. Well, so I was still teaching at secondary school, and I was a secondary school drama teacher. But the alternative comedy started in like 79, wasn't it? Down the comedy store, early 80s. I used to go down there with a couple of mates who later went on to perform as well. And we just went down there as a buzz, really, with the intention of performing. So that was the very first comedy store up in London. It was on in a strip joint. with the glittery curtains and stuff like so. After the strippers, this was like 12 o'clock at night. So we used to go down there. I mean, it was a huge buzz. I'm not sure whether it was any good or not, but we just did it for fun.
Yeah.
Used to, get really charged up.
Mm.
The thing was, if you performed, you could have somebody in for free. You got somebody in for free, and they'd give you three drinks.
Mm.
So we thought, well, if there's two of us, we get four of us and have six free drinks.
Yeah. Yeah.
The emphasis was on the drinks at the time.
Yeah, yeah, great.
We ended up doing a triple act.
Nice.
You know, this was the Rick Mail era.
Oh, yeah.
Alexis Sale, Dalton French, you know, John Egley was on, and Paul Merton, or Paul Martin, as he was then.
All right.
Yeah, so that was pretty mad as well.
You got to rub shoulders with those guys. You got to rub shoulders with all those guys as well. And
a bit. I mean, I was sort of like the new chap. I wasn't in their group or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But it was great fun to watch them. You know, I mean, they were really good.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we were just dabbling with it, really. But it went on. You know, it was a good starting point, really.
Yeah. All those like people, those pros that are so far ahead of you at the time, and then just kind of you can reach towards it, I guess, and as well as the drink.
Well, yeah, that did help, you know. Mm-hmm. Where are they now?
Eh? Yeah. but you in 2018 you won the Lifetime Achievement Award in Comedy Achievement Award, right? And you're voted by fellow comedians on the circuit. You know, you voted given the Lifetime Achievement Award for comedy. That's amazing.
No, it was amazing. I was very chuffed by that, very surprised. And it was a lovely thing to receive. Well, not that I received anything. You don't get anything. But although my wife and daughter did get me a little statue.
Oh, nice. That's nice.
You don't actually get anything physical. But yeah, it was a wonderful thing. I mean, it was really nice. And the comments people were making and conversations I had with people at venues afterwards. Yeah, it was really nice. It was overwhelming, really. I was completely out of the blue. I mean, yeah. Ian Stone rang me up, said, well, I suppose you know why I've called you. And I said, well, have you got a gig for me? So that was quite a big surprise, but absolutely brilliant. Yeah, Lifetime Achievement Award. And you think, well, that's the end then, isn't it?
Can't go on now. Can't continue. Can't win it a second time, can you?
No.
Two lifetimes. How does he? How old is this guy? That's crazy. That's it.
That's right. Yeah, I know.
That's it.
How much older can he get?
Yeah, but, great.
It was a beautiful thing, and I really loved that. It's gone on to other people now, and it so. Well, yes.
When you did that first gig in the Hackney Empire in 1981, was it? 1981, you said? Your first gig?
No, that wouldn't have been the Hackney.
Where was that?
Well, we would have been at the Comedy Store.
Comedy Store.
And there was a little theatre in Croydon, sort of like a basement at the Fairfield Hall.
Mm.
They had comedy there. And also at the Earth Exchange on the Archway Road. Now, that was a little vegetarian restaurant run by Kim Wells, who's an acupuncturist now, if anyone wants any of that. So this was, it was just like some sitting room, really. They would have vegetarian meals at the back, and he'd bottle. So, halfway through the show, he'd go around with a cap and collect money. You get a free meal and a split of the door, basically.
Right.
I mean, that was a great little venue. I remember one time there, I haven't done it for a while, but I do this mind reading routine where I get an object from the audience and somebody from the audience on stage in a blindfold, and I transmit the thoughts into their brain. They somehow know exactly what the object is.
Uh-huh.
There is comedy involved.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there might be a little bit of verbal persuasion down the line as to what the object is. But this particular object I got from this woman handed it to me, and I thought it was a little jar, perfume spray. It's only tiny, and I was giving this guy all the clues as to what it could possibly be, and he couldn't get it. So I sort of I mimed to the woman, is it all right if I could just give it a little spray? And she nodded and smiled. And so I did, thinking he'll whiff it and realise it's a perfume. You know? And it was bloody mace.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
I know. And this was a tiny room.
Yeah.
Packed with people. And it was just a tiny little spray, but it was instant. Everybody just bolted for the door. And we're all out on the grass. I mean, luckily for the guy who was on stage, he had a blindfold on, so he wasn't too affected. But the rest of us, you know, it was a little bit of it was a bit sore for a while.
Yeah.
And the funny thing was that while everyone's outside wiping their eyes and using their handkerchiefs and stuff, Kim would come. Kim came round.
Never miss a moment. I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
That's it. You'll remember this.
I can't remember how much we earned that night. But,
that's funny.
On the follow-up, there was a guy from City Limits, which was the precursor of Time Out. He was reviewing the whole... He was reviewing the night. And his comment was, "Oats cannelloni, not a dry eye in the house."
Oh, that's brilliant.
That's great. I should still be using that.
Yeah, it's great. That's great. That's nice. That unintentionally makes the audience... Well, oh my God.
Yeah, this woman, I think she was a little bit weird.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to say yes to something like that is a bit outrageous, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, yes, yeah, a bit dangerous.
It was a very alternative place. It was a very alternative place.
Wow.
You know, I remember the Paul Stanley Amateur Dramatic Society, which was a double act. It was Andy Linden. His name will come to me in a minute. They did a really funny act, Port Stanley Amateur, during the Falklands. For some, I can't remember what the reason was, but they were throwing meat into the audience.
Right.
Awful.
Oh.
And this is a vegetarian restaurant.
Yeah. I mean,
were barred.
Yeah, I'll bet. Oh, yeah. Wow.
Oh, Cliff Parisi. That's
yeah.
It. Cliff Parisi.
Great. Oh, just really riling the audience up a bit, you know, even before he said anything, throwing offal at the audience, you know what I mean? Oh my God. And I'm going to say as well, like you went to a vegetarian restaurant and accidentally maced the most kind of chilled out, kind of more like, you know, kind of we're all on this planet together trying to, you know, get by. You just like went in there and accidentally maced them all. It's like they did not expect that. They just thought, whoa, this is a safe place. Not anymore. No, not today. That's so funny.
I turned that on his head, that's for sure. Completely by accident, of course.
Yeah.
I certainly wouldn't have done it if
that's funny.
If I knew that was going to happen. But they were the early, they were the sort of early places where I was performing, because there were very, very few cabaret venues then.
Yeah.
You know, and I was lucky that it sort of started then, and I've managed to stay more or less earning a living as the circuit sort of burgeoned, and you know, you went into bigger places and more regular work, and things changed quite a lot. And like I say, it went from varieties, it was where I was working it, to although the Comedy Store's always been basically just stand up, to what it is today, which is usually just stand up.
I guess you prefer the variety nights, do you, to just straight stand up nights? Or what? I mean, I know
I do. Yeah. I do. I think they're much more varied. You know, it's an all round entertainment, really. I think it gets a bit boring, one bloke after, it's usually one bloke after another, isn't it, coming up doing their stuff. As varied as they are and as good as they are, I still prefer a little bit more of a mixture.
Well, we played some stuff in Edinburgh as well, and I got booked on a bill which there was some burlesque performers on, and I was quite nervous about the fact that there was going to be burlesque on before me in the night, and I was like, oh no, how is this going to go down? You know, these girls are taking very much so, and there was this guy at the back taking videos of it and the whole thing, and I was like, okay, this guy's videoing this thing. I mean, sure, I'm sure it's for their show reel. Is it for their show reel? No, it's for himself. Okay, great, this is awkward. And like this Australian lady, I forget her name, she was she went on and she did an amazing act. There, you know, there was like three burlesque and then I was myself at the end, and I wasn't sure I was going to go, and I was like, right, re-stressed, because I was like, they've already seen like more than I'm going to show them. You know? So I was like, okay, and I was like, right, okay, I'll just go a little bit more a little bit ruder than I usually would go. And it was a lovely contrast, because the energy was so high and I was so different to the whole thing, and you're like, oh lovely, because they're really set up, and it's easier because, as I say, it's a variety night, and it's in the word, isn't it? It's in the name, is in the name of the night, is in the word. But
those old new variety nights, they really used to build. I mean, comedy, you know, the stand-up comedy does as well, because it was, you know, such a contrast to what you were seeing, you know, poetry, somebody playing something, and then a stand up and then a band. It was a real mishmash and a mixture. It's a sort of all round entertainment, really.
And when you're saying before about when the Hackney Empire, when it first started with the orchestra as well, and there was a dance at the end, it's like, you know, even when it's like, I say, when it's like, could be just one bloke after another, just saying this more or less the same thing in a different perspective. There's only some nights when it's just that format of stand up that you come away after the headliner's blown everyone away and you can feel the audience just still going, wow, where do we take this? This is brilliant. What do we do with this? We write in a diary, you know, it was such a good night. Yeah. And that is very, very rare. That is such a rare thing. But I guess with the variety thing, the energy was there and they got to make the night their own at the end with the dancing and the, you know, and just carrying on. That's great.
Yeah, well, it's a real fulfillment of the evening. Yeah. Everybody was up.
Yeah.
Like, they were great fun.
Building a community, otherwise it just feels a bit like transactional.
The lights get turned off.
Yeah, that's it. It's like, right, that's it now. Thanks. You've been great. Thanks for your money. Totally. We've done our thing.
The bar is shut.
Yeah, that's it. It's such a shame because we're missing that. Missing the heart, isn't it, really, of the whole thing. So, like, in all the gigs then, what's the worst gig you've ever had or been inflicted on or been booked for?
Oh, I mean, I've died on my arse a few times. I remember once I was doing Battersea. I was working at Battersea Jonglers and I got a phone call from Malcolm Hardy and he said, we're an act light, can you come over? So I was going from West London to East London. I said, well, you know, I'm not going to be there for a while. He said, no, it's fine, you know. So I finished at Battersea, it was on first, and then rushed across town to Greenwich. Walking past the bloody bouncers on the door, I should have guessed the evening wasn't going to go well. I said to the bouncers, I hear you're in need of a comedian. Ever the hopeful and... He said, yeah, we still are, was his reply. Yeah. Malcolm says, are you ready to go on? I said, just give me 5 minutes, you know, the stuff thing in my pockets and get my mind ready after the drive, the dash over there. And he just goes straight onto the stage, says, right. Here we are, back again. Who was the actor? It was going to be Paul Tonkinson. That's right. Paul Tonkinson ain't coming. He's dead. Here's how it's kind of loaded. And the audience was mostly, you know, quite big blokes in Greenwich, started booing.
No.
And they booed all the time. Just continuous booing. And I mean, I just pretended everything was going fine.
Great.
And they were laughing, but they were. Yeah, there was a few people in the audience laughing, and obviously I was taking the piss out of it a bit. But it was so difficult because they just bastards is the more polite word. They just continued booing. And I did 17 minutes, and I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah.
So that was an awful one. There's been a few.
Is that the one that like rings in your mind to giggle?
It does. Oh, really?
Did you sleep that night? Did you sleep that night? I went, oh no.
Yeah, not for a long while. No, oh. Keeps going over. What could I have said? What could I have done? How could I have got out of it? There was no way out of it, really, because they just weren't giving you a chance.
No.
You know, sometimes that happens. I mean, I've had other ones where you've got a group of lads, you know, for no apparent reason, they just decide, right, we're in here, and it's just a barrage, and you're fighting 10 blokes all coming back at you and stuff like that, and it's just impossible sometimes. It's just very, sometimes you can pull it around, but other times it's just, we've seen the best acts die in situations like that.
Yeah. I ask this question to everyone I have on the show. You know, when like you first started, did you have some kind of model that you saw yourself as? Now, this is a very broad question, so you can take your time with it. You know, people you looked up to on the circuit, perhaps, or you went, okay, I'm a bit like that, or like you can
not on the circuit.
Or,
there was,
okay.
When I first started, there was nobody really. I mean, there were people doing it, but you wouldn't see them very much. Like I say, I was brought up on people like Tommy Cooper, Dave Allen. I don't know if you remember.
Yeah.
Dickie Henderson. I used to love Dickie Henderson sitting on his stool. You know, it was a bit like Dean Martin, telling lines and having a drink.
Mm-hmm.
So it was that sort of thing. But mine was more a bit broader than that, in as much as I sort of did a bit of variety stuff as well. You know, I first started off, I used to do juggling and jokes.
Right. Yeah.
That's what I first started doing. Yeah, so I'd be juggling various things and putting jokes in between.
What did you juggle? I would love to know. What was it? Well, go on, tell me what you juggled.
One night I can remember I juggled bags of sick. it wasn't really sick. It was porridge with carrots in. You know, that sort of thing.
Great.
And then from that I went on. I did an act which was a mime act.
Yeah.
Which wasn't really mime, it certainly wasn't classical mime in any stretch of imagination, but I would wear all black, black trousers, black shirt, white shoes, and white gloves. And I would do full-bodied mime. I used to wrestle with giant haystacks. I used to give myself forearm smashes, Irish whips, and I was just throwing myself all over the place. I used to pretend I grabbed him by the balls, and then smashed him all over the place by his balls, that sort of thing. You know, it was very broad and stupid.
Yeah.
The Equity magazine, what was that called? It's called Equity.
Yes, Equity. Magazine. Yeah, I think there's Equity magazine. Yeah, yeah. Great.
They loved it.
But, brilliant.
But I used to come off the stage and I would be completely soaking wet sweat, you know.
Yeah.
And there'd be nowhere to change. Oh. You know, if you were lucky, there was a toilet. And I just thought, after about a year of that, I thought, I can't keep this happening.
Yeah.
I've got to try and do something a little less frenetic. You know?
Yeah.
That's when I turned to doing some magic, which slowed everything down.
Yeah.
And then did patter as well, and jokes and one-liners and stuff, and then got people up on stage and did various things. Mm. I would take tricks and just mess them around a bit, you know, proper tricks. I can do a few proper tricks, but a lot of people think I'm a real magician, and I'm not. I just pretend that I am, you know. But basically, it's just that's the Tommy Cooperish aspect, although he was a very good magician, you know. I am not.
Yeah.
Some people think I am, but it's just the bastardization of the whole genre, really.
Making it look bad is easy, but it's not easy to make it look bad funny, is it?
No, that's the thing.
Yeah.
That's the trick you've got to get.
Everyone can do bad magic. You know, it's like, you know, it's like doing bad stand-up, but like doing bad stand-up and Neil Hamburger?
Oh, yeah.
You know, he does the hack stuff to get laughs, but without being hack at the same time, isn't it? You know, it's a very hard line to walk.
That balance there, yeah.
I've talked to Sean Mio. Like he sees himself as like a gunslinger, like a gun for hire. When you were when you first started, like, what did you see yourself as anything like that? Or I know it's hard to sum yourself up. Basically, what do you see yourself as when you go onto the stage?
Just an entertainer, really.
Right, right.
Just trying to get people to laugh. I love making people laugh. I love telling jokes. You know, any excuse, and I like writing jokes and thinking that's a good joke, and then trying it out and getting the audience to appreciate it as well and laugh at it and think, yeah, I wrote that. I mean, I like telling old jokes as well, but you obviously can't do that normally on stage because we're all supposed to write our own material and stuff. But just trying to get people to laugh, really, and to have a good time. And I've never tried to be adversarial, you know. I've always tried to be warm and friendly and light sort of thing. So Sean's completely opposite to that. You know, he attacks the audience. And he's got such a wicked wit. You know, I haven't got a wicked wit. You know, mine's just a bit more casual than that, really. But horses for courses.
Yeah. Or do you play like music too?
I've tried to play instruments. Yeah. I've got no musical ability. I have got a routine where I play the harmonica.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I fuck around with it for a while. And then I play an extraordinarily brilliant piece of music on it.
Right.
And then it's revealed that it's actually recorded.
great. That's great.
That's by Ronnie Golden. It's him playing the harmonica, really.
I was one when you first started, right? So like, I'm sorry, this is not making sure, I'm not trying to make you feel, thanks, Mitchell. That's really helping my day. Not that means it, just saying like that you've been going so long, like it's wonderful. I love talking to people who've been on the circuit for that long because you guys are like, you're like, you know, you're like the Yoda of the circuit. You know what I mean? It's like, it's brilliant. Yeah. And so,
well, I don't think there's anyone on the circuit at the moment that's been doing it for as long as I have.
That's amazing. Brilliant.
I know that's still doing it on the circuit, you know, that's still making some sort of living on the circuit. I know Steve Gribbin was there, but not a little while after I started. But I mean, there are others that are still doing comedy that were around at those times, but they're now famous.
It's amazing.
A lot of money, but they don't perform on the circuit.
You know? Yeah, you've seen so much go through and go by. Yeah, I guess you've got a maybe sixth sense for a go. Like you could say the force is strong in this one. you just see it as they walk by. You go, there's a weird sixth sense when you walk into a venue or something. You go, okay, that person's a comic. That person's a comic, isn't it? There's a sort of different energy about them, I guess, isn't it? Do you find that?
Yeah, the old funny bones.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of difference. I mean, sometimes you meet comedians, you think, well, you're not particularly funny, are you? But off stage. But I mean, well, that's that Sean Mia line, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever heard
him
say it, but I think absolutely brilliant.
No.
He says, somebody said to him once, what do you do for a living? I'm a comedian. He said, well, you don't seem like a comedian. Hmm. He said, well, you don't seem like a cunt, but here we are.
It's great. It's great.
It's that, but here we are. Yeah. I think it's absolutely fantastic.
Brilliant. Lovely. It's lovely. But you had the bad gig, right? What is the one we went, oh, this is the gig when, like, you feel that I can't top this? What was that gig?
The best one?
Yeah.
Oh, God. So I live in the moment.
Oh, right.
Winters.
They're all the best.
All these things. I did the Palladian twice.
Oh, amazing.
One that they supported Omid.
Yeah.
Really.
Oh.
And some of the Hackney Empire ones were absolutely brilliant. I think the best ones, I mean, the New Variety circuit was absolutely fantastic. But the most fun I've really had that have meant more to me, I've always been involved with John Hegley and the Potticians.
Mm-hmm.
That was his band at the time. I mean, John and I did a double act for quite a few years, the Brown Paper Bag Brothers,
right,
which was an act all about brown paper bags. We do a lot of audience participation, mm-hmm. a lot of poetry involved, there was mime involved, escapology. Mm-hmm. That was a really good act. Everybody in the audience ended up with a brown paper bag. We took that to Edinburgh. We did that in Edinburgh a couple of years.
Yeah.
But we used to work up in Highgate in Lauderdale House. We did it for about 25 years.
Wow.
Family show. We would do family shows. So an audience would be made up of families, you know, youngsters, tiny youngsters with their mum and dads, with them, aunts and uncles. And we'd have 150 people there.
Wow, great.
In the long gallery they got up there downstairs. We'd do a show down the front. It'd be me, John and his band, the Popticians, and sometimes we'd have Podomovsky, who's a mad Russian performer.
Mm.
Andrew Bailey, his real name is.
Right.
And we used to do shows there, and a lot of it was just completely improvised on the spur of the moment. I used to get kids up and we'd do stuff, and they were really heartwarming and fantastic. I can remember going towards the end of it, somebody said to me, he had his little boy there, and he said, I used to come here as a child, and now I'm bringing my son.
That's great.
So we went on for quite a while.
Yeah.
It was on a Sunday morning, so we had to behave ourselves Saturday night.
Yeah, of course.
Early Sunday morning, you know. And,
nice.
They were just fantastic shows, and it was great. It's a lovely building up there, and they've got the park around it, and there's a little cafe at the back, and it was like having a troupe. Mm. I mean, as a stand-up, it's quite a lonely life, really. But as a little troupe, it was fantastic. You know, we all got on well, and after the show, we'd divvy up the money.
Yeah.
And we'd go and spend it at the back having lunch, you know.
Nice. Yeah.
Glass of wine or glass of beer and a very nice meal.
Yeah.
They were fantastic afternoons. It was really, and they go on for a long time.
Yeah. So you've done comedy for kids as well, for kids thing as well, like in London, is it in Brixton? There's a few other venues as well they do too.
Oh, the Comedy Club for Kids.
Yeah, have you done that too?
Yeah. Well, I've done a few of them.
Yeah.
I've done some in Edinburgh for them. And,
great.
In other theatres, quite a few times.
I did the Comedy for Kids a couple of years ago. You know, you talk about doing improv stuff, and I was doing a pirate thing, and I was like, right. And I put a... maybe I had a 5 minute spot or whatever, 5-10 minutes, and I was like, I want to put together like a playlist. I didn't have time to do the playlist, so I was like, right. So I was like, so then I just was like, right, I've got to improvise this, I don't have time. And then, you know, so was like, okay guys, I was like, come on kids, you know, I was like, can you just play the music there for the you know? And I spent the whole 5 minutes just rearing them up, and I was like, guys, what's it, you know, I don't know what's going on, I don't know what I've done to this guy up here, he's just not playing my music. You know, just constantly just wound them up to a frenzy, and they were just screaming. They're tearing. The parents were just looking at me going, I know you've got nothing. <You know>? But, you know, the kids were just like, why are they leaving this poor man? Just destitute. It was so funny. It was so funny. But yeah, it was really a lot of fun. But
well, that's one of the things that I really enjoyed doing all those shows for family was to make it appealing for the children and also for adults as well. You know, that's a real knack, I think.
Yeah, for sure. Give them something for everyone, you know. The kids don't know what's going on for that, but the adults bit, and the kids just are just enthralled with what's going on at the time.
Yeah.
The energy is great. And how many times have you been to Edinburgh then, Otis?
Now, I did I probably went three times in the early 80s, I think. I think the last time I was up there was in 1988. And then in 2014, I wrote a family show about the history of magic.
Ah.
So I cobbled together the sort of story of the history of magic, you know, sort of, quite well bastardised. And it was just an excuse to do tricks, get kids up on stage.
Great.
I would tell some, you know, interesting facts about the history of magic and early tricks and stuff like that, and get kids up. Somebody asked me if I'd like to do it at the Stand in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
I hadn't planned to do that. I was just trying to think of other ways to earn money, you know.
Yes.
But the last time I was up there was in 2014 at the Stand. Doing this family show.
Great.
It wasn't particularly successful, unfortunately, because it was in the wrong place. It was in a stand-up venue away from the main drag. And if it had been a bit more central, it may have been a little bit better attended. But, I mean, a lot of people say that in Edinburgh, don't they? Somebody said it, would you like, there was a management agency, somebody I'd known since the early days of the New Variety. Would you like see if we can get you into Edinburgh? And I said, well, yeah.
Yeah.
It was that situation saying yes. So it was a great experience. I mean, to see Edinburgh after such a long gap, quite an eye-opener, just how big it had become. And just completely massive. Man, I got to see so much, because my show was over by lunchtime. So I was free for the rest of the day. And, you know, I took good advantage of that. And I got into venues for free, saw mates and stuff. And it was really brilliant.
How many actual shows have you written for Edinburgh?
Well, that wasn't written for Edinburgh, but it was a show that I wrote and then took to Edinburgh.
Yeah, right.
But the previous ones were just doing straight stand-up.
Yeah.
The last one I did there in 88 was with John Hegley as the Brown Paper Bag Boys.
Yeah.
And we would do, I mean, John's got a big following anyway, particularly in Edinburgh, because he did it every year for ages and ages. Mm. So we used to get good numbers in. John and I would both do our solo acts in the first half.
Yeah.
We'd do 20, 25 minutes each, you know.
Right.
And in the second half, we'd be the Brown Paper Bag Brothers.
Great.
Change a costume and a double act, you know. That was the second double act. I used to do another double act right in the early days called the legendary Cannelloni Brothers, which was with somebody else, and the Biorgo Cannelloni.
Cool.
Martin Coyote, as he went on later to perform under the name of Martin Coyote.
Yes, I've gigged with Martin Coyote, years ago. You've done the Brown Paper Bag Boys, and then you've done your the history of magic. And so what was your favourite show to perform? Was it the Brown Paper Bag Boys?
That was fantastic. I used to love doing that act.
Yeah.
It was very, quite spontaneous. But so much was audience interaction.
Brilliant.
And working with John Hegley, of course, is just marvellous in itself.
Mm.
they were fantastic shows, but the Lauderdale ones, I think, probably the topmost ones I really enjoyed.
Lauderdale, is that the one in Highgate?
The family shows there.
Different energy, right? A different, because it's, I think with adults, it's like, okay, you kind of roughly know where it can go, but with kids, it's just, it can go anywhere, can't it? There's a fear there, isn't there?
No, I mean, I've had fantastic shows just with adult audiences.
Yeah.
You know, the Jonglers.
Of course.
The Palladium and the Hackney Empire. Doing shows at the Hackney Empire was absolutely fantastic. You know, in that vast room with a huge, huge crowd. Well, you know, getting those big laughs there was absolutely brilliant. Mm. And I did, we did 2 years ago, we did Comedy at the King's, a thing that was organised by John Maloney.
Mm.
All the older acts that don't get on television put some money in, and we did three nights of variety up at the King's Theatre in Glasgow. That was fantastic as well. Brilliant.
Are you writing a new show now, or are you just painting at the moment because it's you're not sure when the next gig's going to come up?
Well, yeah, I've done very little comedy writing this last last few months. I've mostly been concentrating on the painting, which has been quite a blessing, really.
Yeah.
More or less sane. But I am going to revise Magic History of Magic Show.
Oh, yeah.
And I've got an agent who's very keen on that.
Brilliant.
And so we're going to, as soon as we're out of this, well we've already started, really. I've been looking at it again and sort of seeing what I can do with it and changing it slightly.
Yeah.
But that's the next thing that I'm probably going to concentrate on.
Great. And do you know where you're going to, is it going to be in London or is it going to be in Edinburgh? Are you going to take that one around?
I wouldn't aim at Edinburgh, no, myself. I think that's just so difficult to do anything that's, you know, I need to earn money. So that'd be a very difficult place to do it. If it happens, it happens. But like before, it wasn't something I've tried for. This would just be in art centres and little theatres and studio spaces and perhaps even schools anywhere. Doesn't matter where it is, you know.
The History of Magic, I'd love to come see that. It sounds like a real fun show. Is there any bit of advice you would give anyone who is beginning comedy at the moment?
practice.
Yeah.
Keep at it. Try to find your own voice. Don't copy other people. Mm. Write your own material. Yeah. And you've got to be fairly thick-skinned, I think, as well. Try and get a car.
Apart from the online gigs, the couple you had, you said when it was in the early days of the online stuff. Have you been doing any social media stuff as well, or is it just
it's not really my bag, really. No,
that's
I
fair.
Like to be in the room,
feel the energy. Rather, it just feels like energy's going out to somewhere else, isn't it? You can't get the instant gratification of the whole thing. It's like a shared experience, isn't it? Really,
yeah. I've done a couple of comedy chats like we're doing. Nothing really.
So Otis, where can we find you? Otis Candeloni.
Well, at the moment, in the park around the corner. As soon as the weather gets a bit better, I'll be up at my allotment. there's nothing in the diary.
But have you got like what's your website or your if you got on Twitter or anything like this?
I've got the Facebook page.
Yeah.
And I've got Otis Candeloni. .com as the website. So I put shows there when they're forthcoming, when they're coming up.
Well, I'll keep an eye out for that, the History of Magic, because I'd really love to see that show. It'd be great.
That'd be really nice. Well, I've had my injection, so I've had the first one, so I'm halfway there.
That's good. That's good.
We'll all get out of this situation soon. And we're back to a little bit normality.
I guess most of us are nearly halfway or three quarters of the way there.
The light at the end of the tunnel.
That's it. Whatever that is, whatever that means. But Otis Candeloni, thank you for spending an hour and a bit with me talking about comedy. And long may you go, man. Long may you go.
Thanks very much.
And it's been great. I say the History of Magic coming up soon. OtisCandeloni.com.
Watch this space.
And that was episode 108 with the excellent comedian, Lifetime Achievement Award winner, painter, magician, Otis Candeloni. He's brilliant. I love spending an hour with Otis. He is such a bulletproof comedian, lovely fella to boot. And if you are a promoter or booker, book him. He is just so, so good. When I watch him, I just feel the muscles in my face just hurting from smiling. He is so, so good. So you won a Lifetime Achievement Award from his peers. Do you know how hard that is to do in comedy? Oh, it's such a difficult thing. But Otis Candeloni, he's online as OtisCandeloni.com. He's also got a Facebook page. Go and find him there. And if you ever see him on a bill, go and check it out. You will not be disappointed. And go and check his YouTube clip out for the Prestige act that he did at the Hackney Empire. It's when he disappears from one part of the stage and appears at another part of the theatre in just a split second. It is an excellent trick. There's a film about it as well. It's before the film. He's a brilliant comedian, excellent magician, and amazing painter. So go and check all that stuff out there and follow him on all the Instas and, like, you know, socials and all that. You can also follow me. I'm online at Winter Dominus on Instagram. I'm on TikTok as at Winter Dominus. You can find me there. And if you like this podcast enough, you want to donate, you can. Go to Patreon, type in the Comedy Defect Podcast and donate as little or as much as you feel this podcast is worth. But if you can't donate, that's all right. Don't bother. Just, you can buy me a coffee. But if you find an episode you like, that's even better. Just share that one. Tell your friends about it because it tells people where we are and what we're up to. Now, I hope you had a good Christmas and you got some nice presents. You got some nice food. You've been relaxing, chilling out with your family. It's a nice time to just kind of do nothing and rest and catch up in your sleep and, you know, prepare for the new year. And so I hope you're doing that, you know, and if you've got an idea in your head you want to start on, just do a little bit at a time. And, you know, don't take out the whole thing at once because you'd exhaust yourself and burn yourself out. I know from experience, man, I tell you, I burnt myself a couple of times. You know, look, just take it a bit at a time, small baby steps. I can say this now because that's what I'm doing. Small steps because I can't walk. I can say all these things, all these analogies for walking. I can just throw them out. I really understand them now. You know, you can't run before you walk, and you can't walk before you crawl. And if you can't crawl, just get some help for God's sake to get to where you need to. There's plenty of people around there that help you if you just ask for help sometimes. Little help from your mates. There's a song about it, apparently. But look, all I'll say is this. Look, I hope you had a good December. And I wish you a happy new year. And we'll see you in January for episode 109, last Wednesday of the month, with a brilliant comedian. She's been on all the comedy TV panel shows. And she just flew around the comedy circuit. It is, of course, the amazing comedian that she is, Callie Beaton. And we'll speak to her at the end of January, last Wednesday of the month. Happy new year. Chill out. Enjoy yourself. Sleep loads. Till then.